would be like 3 minutes of team. So I feel like we're going to go over time. So, but we'll see. We'll see.
I was going to say, yeah, I kind of have a hard stop at 10. So
yeah,
like if we aim for like 40 minutes total, that'd be good. I don't know how long it'll take though. So we'll just try it.
We'll just try it. All right. Ready Sounds to good. Start going?
I'm good.
Okay. Let's do a quick intro here. It's been a little bit. Or should we be one of those podcasts where you just like casually talk and you're like, oh, it started. When does it start? And then someone says to like the host, oh, we're recording. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, hello. No, I don't know if that's going to be us.
that's the new intro.
I totally was planning that. Or was I? But anyway, hello, everyone. Thank you for joining. We got a little impromptu podcast for Lefty on Two here. I'm Mike White, joined by Ezra Dantowitz, who is the behind the scenes Lefty on Two editor. And everything, a bunch of stuff. And then we're joined by the Lefty on Two stats correspondent, Brian Childs of Raw, Round Analytics Worldwide, roundnetstats.com. And today we're going to just kind of be talking about the Pro Division. No set format. We're going to try to go team by team. Brian brought some fun stats. Ezra's brought all his really strong takes that you never get to hear. And I'm excited about it.
Yeah, should be fun. I think it's been fun working with Brian, putting together the stats pieces for all the finals, because I think there's some really cool stuff that he's looked into for how these teams match up and what they look like over the course of the season, especially because we've seen a lot of these teams in those stats previews, but definitely not all of them.
Right, because it's always been only been the finals, and a lot of these teams got in by just strong finishes. You know, doesn't mean we pretty much only heard about sloppy seconds and, you know, Rahul this whole season in the stats breakdown. So we know a lot about Rahul and Frederick, but not a lot about other people. Brian, so Brian's actually going to give a quick little overview of kind of the stats and stuff that he might be sharing.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Definitely excited to be joining y'all today. Lefty on Two is the best, and excited to kind of add a different perspective. So just for kind of to set the context for people, I'll be talking through, you know, various different stats, and all this is available on roundnetstats.com. And if you hear something and want to kind of dive in more, want more information, we actually have a ton of information to explain things. We have a stats glossary. So if you hear a statistic and you want to understand how it's calculated, you can look at it up there. But if you're also wondering how we designate these stats, whether it's the serve type or even something like a weak or strong designation, we have a stats designation. You can kind of walk through our standards and criteria there. And so, you know, I won't bore you guys with the details for now, but super excited for this. And yeah, definitely excited to talk some more about Rahul and Fred.
And I think the biggest thing, which we'll get to, is 3 seconds in a row. If they get second again, I don't even know what you do. I think at that point, it'd be better just not make the finals than get second another time. But anyway, let's start off with the team that has beaten them before. Sloppy seconds. Probably a lot to say about Travis and Gabe here, most notably, just because of the California tour stop where it just happened. I know there's a lot of things to talk about, but something that I wanted to talk about is in the case of running, you know, cross country and other things like that, there's always talk about where you want to peak. You want to train so that you peak at the end of the season. And so obviously Sloppy had an off day. They weren't too focused in California, which I think is okay. But the other question outside of that is, did they peak a little too early? Did they have their best tournament earlier, or have they not had their best tournament yet?
I think that it'll be hard for them to match kind of the intensity that they brought in both Rock Hill and Chicago. But I also think that this loss in California is almost better for them leading into Nationals than like going into California and walking away with a win. It never feels like losing is good, but I think now that they've got the taste of defeat, they're going to want it even more coming into Nationals. And if they had gone in with like 3 straight wins, it wouldn't feel the same. And maybe that drive to win wouldn't quite be there. Mm-hmm. And I think especially for Travis Kaur, he's one of the biggest competitors. Andrew Carr talked about it in the preview earlier this week. Like, he wants to win. He wants to compete. And knowing how bad it felt to lose round of 16, I think it's going to drive them even more than like the joy of being on top.
Yeah. And I think Travis is actually someone that I talk to a lot at events. He's on the queue for Round of Legends once the season ends. It's just fascinating to talk to him and how he thinks about it. And California, he was going in getting reps. He hadn't played in 2 weeks. He hadn't played, I don't think, maybe since Chicago. He was on vacation with his wife and just was kind of going in to get some reps. So I don't think they were too shaken by it. I think it kind of did show that if they don't bring that intensity, that that is hard for him. Like that team is fueled by the energy that both players can bring. But something similarly is that Chicago, he also said he didn't go in expecting to win and to be playing their best and to win. And they just found themselves kind of doing well in the finals, which was a really interesting thing as well. They were mostly just going in, getting reps, which is also a different tactic teams might be taking this year, where it's like, oh, we got a pro bid. We can just do whatever we want. So they will be, I think, like you said, fully focused come this weekend.
Yeah, and the only thing I'll add to that is, you know, we're looking at a team here that is above average and compared to the rest of the pro field here in almost every stats category. But interestingly enough, they don't necessarily have the individual peaks that a lot of these other teams have. You know, there's not a particular category where they're actually claiming first. And so this is a team that averaged, really well, especially when we consider the strength of competition that they, went across and that their games got statted on, given how far they went in tournaments. But ultimately, the things that they shined best on, despite that tough competition, was the break metrics. It's things like round that plus minus, where they, were second, third best team, and then break percentage. They had a 34% break percentage across the season, which is, truly phenomenal, especially when you consider how many finals they made it to. And so I think, with a team like that, that extra motivation coming out of California, could be that little bit extra to add onto their solid play.
That's a ridiculous metric. Could you remind me, is that on serves made or total serves?
So that's on total serves. Yep.
Dang. Wow. Wow. I mean, obviously Gabe's one of the best servers in the world and they put it all together, but it's interesting before we could keep talking or we can move on. When Sloppy's doing well, it tends to not be very flashy, at least in my experience. It's just, they kind of just beat you by being so strong and consistent. I think that's what kind of, it's sometimes surprising when they make it that far and it's just very consistent. I mean, it's like, I don't want to compare them to Chizik Showalter, but it's like Chizik Showalter. It looks like they're just kind of beating you by just being better over the long period. They're not doing this crazy stuff to make it work.
I don't know. Sometimes when Gabe hits serves, they're doing crazy stuff.
Fair.
Talking about crazy stuff, I think the next team in this pool, Thomas Hamilton and Ryan Gross, they definitely have the potential to do some of that. Thomas's serves sometimes are just unreturnable with how quick trigger he is going both left and right. And Gross kind of has the same thing. He doesn't necessarily have the same quick trigger, but because he's so tall and long and steps out and hits both with his left and right, and we're talking reverse spin, cut spin, and drops, there's so many different things that can happen even after he tosses the ball that it's so hard to guess and be in the right spot on his serve returns. So if they're both landing their serves, they're definitely a team that could take out sloppy seconds. I think I'll go to Brian for the stats, but Thomas's performance in the New England finals was ridiculous with just the number of aces he had in that three-game series.
Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous. If anyone saw my stats breakdown that way for that final, it was essentially a Thomas Hamilton appreciation post. But what you're seeing drive that is for the season, they actually averaged a 28% ace percentage. That's the best of the entire field. And that's not an ace percentage on made serves. That's every serve. And so truly incredible. Yeah, that's accounting for double faults with that. And so, truly incredible. That resulted in a serving impact of 38%. And that's also a best for the entire division. And what serving impact means is that's adding the percentage of your aces and the percentage of your forced weak receives. So basically the bad touches that you're forcing on the opponent. So when you see a 38% serving impact, that means on 38% of their serves, they're either creating a break or creating a likely break opportunity directly from that serve, which is just nuts.
That's crazy. And I think what you say, right, on the season, but really for them, that is right one event. And I think that's the biggest wild card for them, which I believe they are the only team here that has only played one tournament together. And so that makes me think like they could bring it all together, or they had one day and it won't be as successful. I don't really kind of know where to think about where they'll line up against these other strong teams.
I think the other thing there is strength of schedule is probably the lowest for Gross Eggs and Ham. They did beat Hilltop Spikes twice in that tournament. Hilltops, we had them just outside the 10 on the last PR, and Hilltops in the pro field, but that's the only other pro team that they've played all season together. Ryan Gross, of course, had a great season. He got two other pro bids with different partners, so he proved he could get the job done. Hamilton was a little bit underwhelming with Kevin Bailey as Dewey Disciples, but if they click, I think they definitely can do well. It's just they don't have the track record that some of these other teams have, and so we're kind of just a wait and see for this team until Saturday.
Yeah, I was a little underwhelmed, sadly, about how Dewey performed in those events. Because you think that especially their California loss to Michael Sue and Jordan Caradonna. However, like speaking about energy similar to sloppy seconds, Gross Eggs and Ham that day, just they looked like they were just ready to win the entire weekend. Like they were just like fully focused. I think that's kind of what Ryan Gross brings a lot of the time. But I hear what you're saying. They did really well, but any team they beat was right. Gold Diggers and Sloppy Seconds are calibers ahead of where Hilltop may have been. Although that was Hilltop's best day of the season. They were playing really well and beat Kyle and Grant.
Yeah, for sure. I think if you want to get to the next team outside Smoke, we've kind of joked about this and even just on Facebook, but they have been the definition of hot and cold, up and down, or even just solid. So it's really just a matter of what they bring to the table on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear some of the stats on them because neither player has made a finals this year, but Grant Laughlin definitely has the potential to hit some nasty serves, and Noleskis as well. Like he can really bring the heat. He maybe doesn't hit with the same angles and cut that Grant does, but his serves come in hot when he's on.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't want to, you know, pour salt in the wound on anything, but this team really stats as middle of the pack. You know, there's no glaring weaknesses with this team, maybe outside of defense, where they averaged maybe a second best adjusted defensive touches per game. But, you know, that'd be 2.69 per game. So think of that as 2.69 quality touches per game. But they're also they don't have those peaks, and you know, it's kind of similar to Sloppy Seconds in that way, where they don't necessarily have the peaks. However, their baseline is average rather than above average, which is you know, ultimately a little bit telling, you know, their place coming into this pro division. But one of the interesting things with Outside Smoke that I think will be fun for us to all watch is if you look at who their stat comps are. You know, they are hot and cold, but ultimately they comp very closely to Riddle Boys and Gold Diggers. Two teams who I think we're all pretty excited about, and we all see as having you know relatively high ceilings, and I think it's interesting when you look at it through that lens. And I know I'm definitely gonna be excited to see them play on the day.
Now, saying that they are comparable to Gold Diggers in stats, does that speak to how those teams might match up? Because I know they're gonna be playing in pool play. Like, does that give you an edge if you're Outside Smoke because your game matches up similar to Gold Diggers on paper?
You know, I think it does. I think it ultimately it balances that series on a knife edge. It's who's going to have the greater day because they're trying to, you know, do well on the same things and ultimately struggle at the same things as well. I think one of the big differences that you see with Gold Diggers, who they will face in pools, is, you know, Gold Diggers has a slightly stronger you know, serve receive. Their ace is 7% on the season compared to Outside Smoke's 16%. And so that's really the greater advantage. I guess you could also say net touch, where they're about twice as good than Outside Smoke, but it's those fine margins that's going to determine that. And so, you know, if you're talking about them being hot and cold, they're going to need to be hot to get out of that one. Mm-hmm.
But with that hot and cold nature, obviously here they're playing so many more teams, right? Typically you may go to a tournament In pool play, you play one team above you, which they beat Naughty when they did on that day. You know, you might have one chance, one or two maybe, to like pull an upset on those people above them. But here they'll have three chances. So it is definitely possible that they'll hit that hot game and win one or two of these. Hey, this is Mike. You may be like, wow, there's ads on this podcast? Yes and no. I'm just here to urge you to check out Lefty on Two on Instagram. This week for Nationals, we've been running trivia. We post about all our articles there, do fun tournament coverage. And especially if you're going to want to follow Nationals, you're going to want to follow because there will be stories with updates, behind the scenes stuff. I don't even know, but a lot of fun stuff. I think it's worth a follow there. If you don't like it, you can always unfollow. No problem. No worries. Hope you like that. All right, this ad is over. Back to the show.
You know, looking at the next team in this, you know, Garrett and Kyle of Gold Diggers, you know, if we talk about, you know, what Outside Smokes kind of, you know, if they do trend well, they do trend hot, they could look a lot like Gold Diggers. I think with Gold Diggers, they'd probably be looking at the same thing. Obviously, two very accomplished players, but, you know, if they go hot, you know, they'd be looking to reach the ceiling of Riddle Boys.
Yeah, they're another big wild card because both of their results were awesome. And then they lost in three games, right? Like their only losses is three games to Assistive Touch and three games to Rito Boys, which like, right, that they're a number six. That's totally fair. And like, that's just where that comes in with all of these top teams. It gets so hard to break down because for so many of these teams, it's just like, yeah, they've only lost to other top five teams. So I think what's challenging is given those losses, they're clearly so strong and both Carrot and Kyle have had so much success. But I mean, and I think all it takes is, I don't know my butt is, all it takes is a couple things either way for them to have an even more successful season. So I definitely, you know, pick them as the two in this pool. But the question is, could they be sloppy? Is the biggest thing.
Yes, they've done it.
That's could they do it answer. Again? Yes, right. Correct.
I think so. The other piece to me is, I think it's a little tough to place them because they have one result back in June, which is, I don't know, 3.5 months ago, but like forever in roundnut terms.
Yeah.
And then the one result in California, which was stacked. But Garrett Hornock beat Double Clutch with Joe Bondi just 4 weeks ago in Richmond, right? That's a great win. Double Clutch consensus top three team. And has been hot all season. So Garrett's proving he can get it done. I think for Kyle, he had a great start of the season. We didn't see him as much down the stretch. And we know he had some underwhelming, disappointing results with Grant Clapwick, which is fine. Sometimes you just don't mesh with a player. So it doesn't necessarily speak to either Kyle or Grant's performance. But I think Kyle and Garrett, they definitely have all the pieces. It's just a matter of like, if they're on that day, will they get it done? And with the way they played, again, I think that they definitely match up well with Gross Eggs and Ham and Outside Smoke, and they beat Sloppy. So there's no reason they can't take the one seed, whether or not they do it.
And the only thing I'll add there is, you know, this is a team that when you, I do see them getting out of their pool as well. And a lot of for the reasons you just said, they match up well with Outside Smoke and Gross Eggs and Ham, who are going to look to, you know, make a lot of breaks off of their serve. Both teams having, you know, strong ace percentages. And Gold Diggers has a, you know, serve receive is their strength. They have, you know, only allowed 7% aced and, you know, 3% weak receives, and 3% weak receives being the, you know, division's best. But with this team, you know, they probably steal the Outside Smoke unfortunate name or kind of tag as solid in that this team, they stat as a team that is really solid and that really hard to break, you know, excellent serve receive, but their biggest weakness is their break percentage, which is almost a, you know, it's like right at the very bottom with 25%. And so, you know, it's all dependent on it. I don't see them being broken by a lot of these other teams, but will they have the, you know, the ability to break these greater teams, you know?
And I could be wrong, but I remember that in both of the breakdowns, Kyle Ackerman was in, he had a very low break percentage.
He did, except for he did in Garland, but I believe it was the following week in Erie, if I'm getting my ones correct, if I remember correctly. He actually was the standout player in that one and had a significantly better break percentage. And so it was interesting to see if he can put it together with Hornock.
Yeah, I mean, Hornock obviously can just tear people up from the serving line. So I think this team could peak very high, and would not be surprised if they take this pool, as would, I'm sure, many, including many Texas players.
Yeah. So, I mean, talking of Texas players, we had two of them in Pool A, but Pool B is the Texas pool, with three of the four teams being full Texas. Also fun about this pool, it's the only pool where every player is playing in their first pro division at Nationals, which doesn't feel that significant given that more than half the teams are in that state, or I guess exactly half the teams are all playing in their first, but it just feels like we have talked about like this experience versus just like being battle tested and how much that matters given the 2 years off since Nationals. It feels a little significant that this is the only pool where nobody has played in a pro division before.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact number, but I was looking back and it's how many players from 2019 Pro Division returned. And it was like 10 or 11 or 12 or something like that. I don't know if you remember off the top of your head.
I did a count beforehand. Seven of our players have played in all three Pro Divisions. Mm-hmm. Most of those feature in Pool D. 10 of our players have played in at least one, and 22 of the 32 players are in their first Pro Division.
That's crazy. And so I think that speaks to, truthfully, the story at the start of the season was that we have so many new players coming in, which is awesome. And right, I was thinking back just last night about where all these players were back in 2019 and 2018, right? Like Burroughs and Garrett Hornock played together in Premier, and I believe they got T9, and it's like, right, I remember watching them play, and I knew Burroughs because I saw him in Weisberg, but I didn't really know who Garrett was, right? I remember Frederick, was it 2019 Nashville when he earned Premier with Tripp, if that's correct. And like all of this stuff and all of these players have been working so hard for the past couple of years that we have such a different season. We had such a different season this year and such a different pro division that it's just, I think, we kind of glossed over it. Like we talked about it in the beginning of the season and then we were right into it. And you're bringing it up again that like, it is absolutely crazy that we have so many players playing in the first pro division this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, and one of these things is not like the others for a couple of reasons, and that's Hilltop Spikes. One, they did qualify for a pro division in 2018, of course, but Max was injured at regionals, so they were not able to participate. The bigger one is they are not from Texas. And so I think there's some advantages, but also probably a lot of disadvantages, especially on serve receive for them in this pool. And especially the case when you look at who the servers are in this pool. Rahul and Frederick have got it done from the serving line all year. We've seen that in the stats and just the power that they hit their serves with. It's kind of just different from any of the other servers in the field. And then David Louis and Luke Mowry, we haven't seen them much, right? Like they played the one tournament together in Utah. Luke came out to California where he was serving hot, but unfortunately drew sloppy seconds around at 32. Still almost got it done. I see Hilltop, like their game lives and dies on the serve receive here. And I don't think there's anyone who has that quite as much as Hilltop, with just unfamiliarity and strong servers all around them.
I'll add one thing on Hilltop, which is that, you know, when you're looking at them, one of the, you know, obviously we don't have like a ton of, or maybe not obviously, but we don't have a ton of games in theirs, you know, about middle of the pack compared to the rest as far as games that we have statted. But what really pops out is this, you know, 26% aced percentage. I mean, they were aced 26% of the time. And if you think back, a lot of that is coming from that series where Thomas Hamilton absolutely went off, but that should be a little bit scary if you're Hilltop, because you're in the same pool as the only person to top Thomas Hamilton's performance in that finals, which is Rahul Murthy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you talk about the unfamiliarity with these Texas serves. I think that's Hilltop's, you know, it's something Hilltop's definitely going to have to come fully prepared for. Hopefully they're watching a lot of film, but still there's very few that can, you know, put your way there. They're just going to hope they really lean into their strengths, which is, you know, they've got the best net touch in this entire thing. That's, you know, more strong plays than weak plays and errors. And, you know, overall, an incredible kind of, you know, team heat or division leading put away percentage of 73%. So as long as they can lean into those, hopefully can, you know, reduce the impact of that, you know, the serving disadvantage that they've got.
All right. I will now move into my question about Double Clutch that I so kindly interrupted about before. And I think my thing is for Brian, but maybe Ezra, is why does Double Clutch keep losing in the finals?
Their little legs get tired.
It's I'm not going to promise you that the stats play it out. If anything, I think the stats probably put that to question. You know, when you look at the aggregate, this team really has the most positive stats of any team in the rest of the division, and that is incredible and insane and really mind-blowing when you consider that we don't have stats from their just bonkers run in Seattle where they bulldozed the field. You know, we're looking at an ace percentage for their season of 21%. Let's remember that I'm pretty sure they won their finals games by like 21-12, 21-14 or something like that, both games. And it was a lot due to aces. And so that should be a lot higher. And when I look at, you know, this team, this is one that comps very similarly to Sloppy Seconds and to Low Key, who we'll talk about a little bit later, but this is the highest comp tier of the rest of the tiers. You know, that set of comps was the strongest of anyone else, and they were the number one team out of that. And so, you know, I see them as really being the team to beat from a statistical standpoint, and that's amazing when you consider the high level of competition that they faced, because they were in so many finals, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I think the only other thing I'll add on maybe why they're losing, not that it's why they're losing, but a fact that I've seen is it looks like some just offensive missteps come into play in finals where Rahul and Fred are great hitters at just either blasting the ball past opponents or over opponents. And it seems like just anecdotally, so I don't know how it bears out in the stats if it does, but there's been a lot of just offensive miscues where maybe they dink a hit where they didn't need to, or they miss a hit at a clutch situation. We definitely saw that in Chicago with Rahul just off on a hit to come within a break. And so just limiting those offensive mistakes late in games seems like that could be the difference maker in a finals or a semifinal pressure situation.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think
not to enter.
No, go for it, Brian. I was just going to agree with Ezra and say, I totally think it's just those little things that would probably give them those extra couple breaks. Cause when they lose, it's typically not by much.
Yeah. And I was maybe ironic. I was going to say not to interject, but ended up interjecting. So apologies there. But just to say the stats do play that out, Ezra. They have a below average put away percentage of 59%. And when you dive deeper into the stats, that's a result of them having maybe more hitting errors or missed hits than typical teams. Because when they do get on the net, it does put away at a really strong percentage.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Let's jump to Y Spike toxicity. I'd be curious just to hear stats wise how they compare, because we really only saw them play once. And at that, I really only saw like two of their games. I watched their quarterfinal a little bit against Foot and Ortega, and then I watched a little bit of that true second. But they looked unreturnable at points.
Yeah, they really were really are. And I think the interesting thing is their stats comp here is Gross Eggs and Ham. And crazily enough, we talked about a small sample size for Gross Eggs and Ham. Why Spike Toxicity has a larger sample size just as far as stats taken from that tournament. Seven games compared to Gross Eggs and Ham's just three. But in those seven games, they averaged a division-leading ace percentage of 30%. That is just insane over seven games. And especially when you consider that the stats that we have are from their semis and third place and true second. And so really, really impressive there. But again, they comp very similar to Gross Eggs and Ham. And so have similar things that they're going to be worrying about. They're they're going to need to worry about getting their, you know, they've got one of the below average serve on percentage, and the worst defensive touch, you know, adjusted defensive touch rating at 2.29 per game. And so, you know, there's fine margins. If they get an extra defensive touch a game that they may be, you know, that's above their average, that can go a long way, you know, with this team.
That's interesting to note. So very high ace percentage, but worse touch percentage. But that also exactly what you say is similar to double clutch. Just a couple tightening up a couple little areas could go really far.
And the only thing I'll add is, you know, Wi-Fi toxicity is great on both sides of the serving game. And so from a serve receive, they statted extremely well, you know, with just, you know, top five in both ace percentage and weak receive percentage. And given the fact they're in a pool with, you know, serves that they're all familiar with, I'm obviously Hilltop Spikes being the exception there. I wouldn't expect that to change.
Do you think they beat double clutch on Saturday?
I don't think so. I think it'll be an amazing series, and it's one of the ones that I hope to be able to watch. You know, maybe I'll just forfeit my pool play games so I can watch that one. But I think it would be an amazing game. But I think Fred and Rahul have a mental edge. Not that I don't want that to sound like a negative for David and Luke, who are extremely strong mental players. But Fred and Rahul have some of the best mental games in the world right now. And I think that they carry with them a confidence that, you know, we talk about things being balanced on a knife edge. Sometimes it's a little bit of confidence that'll push it one way.
Interesting. And the last team in this pool is Tiki Taka, which I think, unfortunately, is similar to Outside Smoke, which we talked about, where I kept thinking they were going to have a big breakout tournament and then just didn't. Like, the most notably was obviously they were a semi-surprise when they beat Hilltop and made it out of the pool in Rock Hill. I think at the time, a lot of us didn't understand how strong they were. But the most notable was Chicago, where they beat, was it Ryan Gross and Garrett Hornock in pool play? But then, and had a great, great route for them, but ended up falling to low key in the quarters. And so again, it was just, they're just right in that middle level. Obviously, I think they have a very high ceiling, right? They beat Hilltop Spikes before, but it don't really know what we're going to get on Saturday.
I think the other thing for them is just they get the job done in pools. They've kind of been the pool play kings, but they've not gotten the job done in bracket. Their only bracket win in the season came in Richmond. It was in three games over Dimitri Ferrand and Kevin McLean. So if they can get the hot start in pool play, that'd be awesome. It'd set them up, especially given how tough this pool can be. But maybe like the Texas edge is what they need. Knowing these two teams a little bit better than you normally would your pool play competitors, that'll be enough for them to get their hot start in pool play. It's just like, do they have it in the afternoon? And so far this season, they have not.
And it's interesting when you look at the pool play, because they, you know, they're a team that, again, hasn't done that great in bracket, but has been in some of the toughest pools of the entire season. And so, you know, they have had a good competition there and done well. But when you look at this team, especially on the stats, this is a team that it has one of the just highest range of outcomes. They are excellent, you know, leading the best setting team in the whole division, even outpacing Naughty. But they also really struggle, particularly to force breaks. And a lot of that's down to the fact that, you know, on the, at least the games that were statted here, you're looking at low serving metrics, you know, the worst aced percentage of 3%, and also worst serve on percentage of, or second worst serve on percentage of 65%. And so, I know these players. I know that that's not actually the case. And, you know, they can, you know, have games where they are a little more blunt like this, but they also have games where they stat in the, you know, 30th, you know, percentiles for eighth percentage. And so I think, you know, this is a team that if their serves are hitting, a lot of this will be a mental factor for them, especially against teams they know. But it's going to be all about, can they force those breaks and, you know, not give away things, silly things like with, you know, weak hitting percentages and serves.
Hello, it is again me with another ad, and this is just for Roundnut Stats. We have Brian talking through all these stats. You can get stats of your own. Find out how at roundnutstats.com, but they'll give you the full stats, and you can break down your own stuff, see where your best serves are, how's your hitting percentage, what things you need to work on. It's a extremely useful tool to help improve your game. So roundnutstats.com. If you want more info, check out roundnutstats on Instagram. Also send them a message. They're happy to talk with you. Anyway, back to the show.
Yeah, let's jump into pool C. I'd say this is the second most experienced pool, if we want to use that as a new stat, Brian, in that they've got a few players who've been around a while and then a few players who are almost brand new looking at Vali Lamas. Warren Foote and Ryan Oswalt somewhere in the middle, where Warren actually qualified for pro in 2019, but just wasn't able to make it out to claim the bid. So a top two in the pool, you know him, you love him. It's assistive touch, right? Clark and Buddy, they're coming off that huge win in California, where that it's a weird like to describe them, because they're not one of those like knockdown drag out. They're not beating up on anyone. It's almost like that old style of anchored LI, where they will outlast any opponent because it's so hard to get clean putaways on them. And then the X factor is their serving, right? Like neither of these players, maybe Clark a little bit, but definitely not Buddy, was known as a serve baller, but they've got good serves, and not just good in that they put pressure on, like they get some aces. We didn't see it in the finals, but especially in that wonky soft semifinal, they were getting some aces when they really needed to get back in games.
Yeah, I just
It really is interesting looking at the ace percentage, because you know, you're right. They for the season, this team has a lot of games that have been statted, and their ace percentage is you know really low at 10%. But I think if you took this from maybe just the most recent tournament, that would look a lot different, and something that maybe this team has changed over the course of the season. Specifically, Buddy. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I don't even know what I was saying, but I think that's like, when you say that's the X factor, I think that is the X factor. And we talked about this on commentary where, right, the talk for Naughty was, will their defensive breaks make up for the aces? And so in the case of assistive touch, where they do have plenty of defensive touches and putaways, because they're both incredible setters, more notably Clark. Clark's my new favorite player. It's just been waiting to happen. He's just too smooth. When you watch him, he takes like two steps. I think it's his size too. It helps. That's just me gushing on Clark real quick. But I think the biggest thing is when they add in two to three aces a game, then that puts them in a whole different threshold. And sometimes they're matching the other team's aces because of their serve receive. So really that just is the whole cycle of how you beat teams, right? Don't get aced. Right. Don't get aced so that your defensive touches can matter. Oh, you're getting aces yourself. You know, there's just, that's just math. And that's just how you win round net games.
Yeah. But I think looking at the stats, so sorry about that, Ezra, go ahead.
No, I was going to the stats. I'm curious, because it feels to me like assistive touch is almost like a Naughty plus plus, where they're great on defense. They've got great touch. They're all over the ball, but then obviously the results are better, and just looking at them, they look much better. Where do they compare to other teams? And is Naughty a fair comparison, or are they just like a class above?
You, the eye test is not lying for you there. their comps are Naughty and surprisingly Tiki Taka. So with these teams, what you're looking at is relatively weak ace percentages, but very high serve on percentages. You know, the touch leading the division in that. But more than just the serving side being relatively weak, these teams are the top setting teams and the top defensive teams in the entire division. And to that point, are converting on those with above average to top putaway percentages. And so if you're looking at Tiki Taka, if they play their game and they play well, that's the kind of ceiling that they've got. These incredible, almost old school teams. But going to assistive touch and Naughty, what you're looking at here is teams that are blowing away the field, just complete outliers on the defensive touch and setting realms, with them each averaging over six quality defensive touches, that adjusted defensive touch metric. per game, which is, you know, really insane. But again, you were absolutely right when you said that an assisted touch is kind of like that naughty plus plus. They definitely rank as the top team in this comp tier, and I wouldn't expect that to change.
Yeah, and we casually talked about Naughty mentioning them there, but truthfully, they had the biggest drop this season on the last PR, going down, I think, 8 spots, which is challenging, especially when they just went very close 3 games with double clutch. But I think with them, the difference was, truthfully, we got to see them against more people, and they were just getting out last, but they had their best performance there. So based on what you're saying, assisted touch and Naughty match up perfectly, I don't see that going the way of Naughty, but I'm very curious to see how they go against Volley Llamas, because especially same with assistive touch, because those are just two drastically different teams competing against each other.
I think Volley Llamas is, yeah, it's funny how totally different they are, right? Just on longevity, right? Joe and Will, pretty new to the game, started playing probably around 2019. And
Will is a national champion, though. Championship.
Will is a youth national champion. I'm a national champion. They're just giving away these days. Brian's a national champion.
I'm like, you're a national champion.
We're all national champions.
Let's go.
Depends on how you count them. But sorry. Joe and Will are so... they're not so new, but they're so new when you compare them to Ryan Fitzgerald, Jarrett Rouse, Buddy Hammond, even Clark Marshall has been playing forever, seemingly. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get these wins. And I really do think it's just on the back of like serving and aces for them, because if you get into long points, Volley Llamas is not winning like rallies against assistive touch or Naughty. I just don't know how they can keep up with the touch. And it's not to say Joe and Will are bad or have bad touch, but you're playing against some of the all-time best, like bar none, Ryan Fitzgerald, Jarrett Rouse, great touch. Clark and Buddy have shown that they're awesome at that. So if you're not hitting ace serves, which is so hard to do against these four competitors in particular, I just don't see how Volley Llamas gets the wins in these series.
And I think the stats back that up. I think if you look at their stats, you know, serving, they stat, you know, slightly above average, but closer to average than maybe you would expect, you know, especially given, you know, the high ceiling on their serves. But when you look at it, they really trend kind of like below average on the rest of things, particularly in the touch metrics, you know, nearly the worst net touch and one of the worst setting plus minuses in the division. And so again, yeah, I think for them, it's all going to be serving based, like you said. You know, they don't want to get into long rallies where, you know, Naughty and the touch are really going to be able to, you know, express their dominance. But if they're serving well in the day, it matches up really well with, you know, particularly Naughty's weaknesses on, you know, serve receive. And so I think that'll be, I'm really fascinated to look at that, that little serving battle or serving serve receive battle between Llamas and Naughty.
Yeah. Only last thing on Llamas, and like, again, my stats aren't as well researched as Brian's, but stat of the day for me is they have one pro bracket series win on the season. Now, caveat that they only have 2 tour stop appearances. Erie was a 4-team pro bracket that they qualified for, and they beat Finaki and Lusius. And then in Rock Hill, they made the 18 pro bracket and they got knocked out in the quarterfinals. So, I mean, Brian, I don't know if you have that up, but my guess is they probably only have 3 series statted. One of them is that finals in Erie, where, not to lay into them, but I think that they were a little bit just deflated after that huge semifinals win and definitely did not play their best round net. So if anything, not that the stats lie, but I think there's a lot of upside compared to the stats for them, especially around touch. I remember watching that Erie finals and just being confused with how out of it both Joe and Will looked. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement and that they really could bear that out. Joe in particular looked unbeatable when he played with Garrett Hornock in Richmond, and Will definitely has the potential to pop off at some of the same rates for the serves. So if they're on, I really do think they can beat these teams, but it's just they need to be their best version of Volley Llamas.
Totally agree there. And I think a big thing is if Will, yeah, I know in that one series, in one of the series that's weighing heavily on these stats, I know Will did have probably for him a below average serving series. And so, you know, I think if he's able to rectify that and at Nationals, I think there's a definite opportunity for this team to pop off.
Yeah, and I forget exactly who they lost to in Rock Hill. You can remind me. But it was definitely a very good team. And then right, their only other loss was they lost to sloppy seconds in that pool play, and they lost to Kyle and Ryan Gross in the finals. So their losses have all been to, you know, top six esque teams. Makes sense. They're at eight. So on paper, you still think you got to get them against Naughty. It just comes down to how well Naughty handles those serves. But like you said, a peak Lolly Llamas could challenge them and even assistive touch. But I'm going to move on to Foot Oswalt, which is the last team in this pool. And, you know, I'm looking at Andrew's preview here, right? He has them as four here. But, you know, Naughty and Foot Oswalt played in California in pool play. We streamed that. We didn't stream it. We recorded it. So maybe it'll be on YouTube soon. But that went three games. And really what it came down to was Naughty getting big defensive touches at the end. But Warren Foot really impressed me. His hitting was extremely solid. Got a little sloppy, but I think that was from worse sets near the end. And it looked like Oswalt wasn't even playing his best. So I could see that actually going the way of Foot Oswalt this weekend.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that was a rematch from California, but I think they play like super boom bust, to come up with a new word to describe the same thing. And I'm just thinking back to their matchup with Ryan Gross and Grant Klapwick in pool play at Richmond. I think games one and two were like 21-12, 21-11 each way. And then game three was close. So, and for them, it's not just serving. When you think of boom bust, you think of serving. For them, it's they get touches, but sometimes they're just not there. And sometimes it's probably just like the energy, the setup, you're not in the right headspace to get in the spots. But Warren's one of the quickest defenders, I think, in the game. And he's always running stuff down. I think the big thing is he's always running, and sometimes the ball is where he runs. But if he's in the spots, they make those big plays and they can get the ball back to net from far.
I guess, unfortunately, Brian, Foot Oswalt is one of the... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask if you have any comps for them, just because I think they're new to a lot of the viewers, listeners.
Yeah, and they're going to be new to me as well. A big question mark here, and that's just because we actually don't have any stats. We did not receive any game footage for their kind of games this year, and so really unfortunate to lose that. But you know, I'm excited to get some stats and see how they comp up after.
And that's how you know we're doing this live, because if we had pre-gamed, I probably wouldn't have set Brian up to fail right there.
I blame myself.
All right. And Ezra has to hop off probably in the next few minutes, but we're going to get started into Pool D, and then Brian and I will take you home. So Ezra, why don't you start us off here?
I think the most interesting thing to me, one, this is the only pool with past national champions. We've got Preston Byes, who won back in 2016 with two guys. Sorry, I'll caveat. Past pro division or premier division or open division national champions, right? Preston won back in 2016. Peter John Showalter, obviously, in this pool, three-time national champ. This pool also has five players who will have played in all three pro divisions. That's Joel and PJ, Caleb and Preston, and then Taylor Church, who's playing with Dawson Morgan. So just tons of experience in this national stage. I do think I'm going to side with experience is a little bit overrated. We've seen that in all these newer players this year who have gone off and performed super great in tournaments. And I'll start with them, even though at the bottom of the pool, I think nationals will bring out something in Graham Showalter that we have not seen all season. So not to dig into them, they are the only team on this list of 16 teams that has won zero pro bracket games all season. So they've made the pro bracket, I think, three times now, and every time they've lost their first game in an era,
you mean match.
Yeah, pro matches, yeah.
Okay.
So in pool play, they've advanced a handful of times. This will be the toughest pool they've faced all year. But I do think that both Peter John Showalter and Joel Graham are some of the best competitors we've seen in the round net scene ever. And if they're able to turn it on, and if there's no time like nationals to do it, I think that they could get an upset or two in pool play, even though on paper, and I'm sure in the stats, they look completely outmatched by their opponents.
Yeah, and Peter John is one of the most clutch players of all time. We don't forget what happened 2 years ago. So I totally agree with you. I don't know if it would ever be enough to beat Boisterous or Rito, but certainly could take out Loki.
Just to touch on their stats here slightly, they are one of the more interesting teams. They comp to Vali Llamas, and I think they have a lot of the same kind of talking points around this, and that, you know, if they're able to shore up some of their weaknesses, you know, specifically around, you know, setting, they have the second worst setting plus minus at, you know, negative 0.46. And then they also had, you know, just below average on surface Eve. If they can shore up some of those things and then lean into their serving a little bit more, where, you know, they only average 11% ace percentage in those games. If they can improve that, which I think we all know that PJ has the ability to, if they're able to do that, they actually stat really strong. They have high peaks, excellent serve on percentage, above average to excellent put away percentage. And even on defense, they statted extremely well there. They have an opportunity to, but again, they're going to have to really come in clutch to do so.
As you want to jump back to the top. Yeah. Rito boys, all the hype coming into the season. I think that everyone wants to see Rito boys versus Boisterous, Ryder versus Preston. You've probably heard it, but Ryder came into the sport through Preston and I think learned a lot from him as he was just improving rapidly. And so that'll be a very fun matchup to watch. I don't know, like, stats wise, how those two teams compare. My guess is that Rito boys probably has the edge just based on Boisterous's lack of results, only playing two tournaments. But I don't know. I'd be curious to hear what those two teams look like on paper.
Before Brian goes in, I will say that at the start of the season, Ryder Riva was on a Round Out World podcast and they said, what are your goals for this year? And he said, beat Boisterous. So that's definitely, there's, you know, he's probably half joking, but there's definitely some pride, a lot of pride going into this match.
Well, I think the stats would, you know, definitely give him confidence coming into this one. Take this as, you know, validation that Rito has twice as many statted games at really high volume. So 16 games compared to Boisterous's 9. So we're not dealing with super small sample sizes here. This is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And they comp better really across the board. There's, you know, the only metrics where Boisterous is statting, you know, higher than them, it's extremely close. All to say, Rito boys has shown, you know, really positive adjusted defensive touch metrics, excellent serving, and really solid serve receive. Add that to net touch, they really stat out, you know, significantly better than Boisterous.
Mm-hmm. And not necessarily related to the stats, but Boisterous was very challenging for a lot of people to rank for this last power ranking, because given, right, only two results this season and they lost to sloppy seconds and assistive touch, the 1 and 2. So that makes it challenging because, right, they could be the 3. You never know. They only lost to the 1 and 2, but with those only being their close competition, right, they beat Buddy and Frederick. Other than that, they beat Foot Oswald. So we're not really sure where they lie. We're feeling pretty solid that Rito boys is the 4 right now. And so, right, Boisterous is right at them technically, but you don't really know, right? They're between that 3 to 14 spot based on it. Obviously Frederick and Buddy would be higher, but they're in kind of that lane that we're not sure of. And I think, but similar to what we said about Graham Showalter a second ago, Boisterous likely is bringing something extra at this Nationals. Earlier in the season, when asked how many are you going to, they just said Nationals, because that's probably the thing that matters. And if you're around and round it, that's how it feels for a lot of people. I remember back in the day, you know, the days of Origin Vengeance and Origin Elite, right? They had incredible regular seasons, but they didn't perform at Nationals. And I think that is something that a lot of these longer teams feel, that Nationals really is the most important event of the year, as it is and as it should be. but probably to the point where they care less about these other events. And this is all they're focused on and will be bringing 150% effort compared to what we saw in Rock Hill in California, where they did not do bad at all.
And to add to that, Mike, if, you know, if we do talk about things that they could bring extra to the table that could really swing things in their favor, it's really serving. They came in with one of the worst ace percentages with only 12%. And I think that's something that if you look at both of these players, we see them as having the ability to really outperform, you know, that metric. And so I think if they maybe do lockdown, put in some, you know, some hours, you know, at the garage at home, mm-hmm. Bring some stronger serves to nationals, I think they have an opportunity to do that, which ultimately will drive up their break percentage, which was one of the worst in the whole division at 24%. And they can lift those two metrics, which I think are connected. They have a real chance of being the boisterous we all know and love.
Yeah, I think that's really the question is, we don't know what boisterous team we have this season. And on top of that, we don't know what we're going to see on Saturday. And that's pretty exciting. And just seeing that Rito Boys boisterous, which may be streamed, we'll find out. That'll be a great one to watch. So now we are talking about our 16th team, the last team in the pro division, not the 16th seed, just the last team we're talking about. Low key, Dawson Morgan and Taylor Church, which Ezra mentioned, Taylor Church has been in every pro division, extremely experienced in this realm. And Dawson Morgan coming in, I want to shout out to Low Key because I love that they formed a team early and they had the plan of, we're not going to start playing until later in the season. But when they did very well and easily got themselves a spot in here. I think this is going to be another challenge where this team is semi in the middle, right? They beat Tiki Taka, they beat Outside Smoke, they beat Hilltop, and no team, I don't believe, in bracket play has beat them in two games, right? They lost to Double Clutch, Sloppy, Gold Diggers, but all in three games. So they kind of, as Andrew said, are a sleeper pick. You know, they have clearly shown that they have a lot of skills to upset teams and have brought it very close about top teams. So I'm interested to see kind of what their stats say, if you have the games from them.
We have tons of games from them. And I will go ahead and say this was the biggest surprise for me when looking at the stats. And it was a happy surprise. This team statted much higher than expectations for me. I like both these players and I know, you know, their games reasonably well, but they really meshed as a team. And I think you see a team that they comp to Sloppy Seconds and Double Clutch. That's that top comp tier. And that they're actually better than both of those teams. Now, I still have them as the third team in that comp tier, just based on, you're not trying to add subjectivity to it, but just based on the competition that they were playing. Sloppy Seconds and Double Clutch played significantly more finals and finals and lots of finals at that. And so, you know, that weighed on things a little bit, but you know, getting into, you know, where they are strong, they had a, you know, slightly below average ace percentage, but just barely, and everything else was above average. And that is crazy. You're only seeing that with the top three, maybe four teams. And so this was a truly, you know, telling thing, but it wasn't just that they're an above average team, but in those ceilings, they had basically the best break percentage with 38%. You know, that's the only one that they're losing to there is Gross Eggs and Ham, who, again, we only have the statted series from that one where Thomas just went off. And so they, on three times the volume, had almost the exact same break percentage. Insane. So you got to watch out for this team, and particularly strong in, you know, serve receive or in serving, rather. And, you know, ultimately, their put away percentage was really strong too, comping to, you know, the third best put away percentage. And so when you look at this, this is a team I think is really exciting. I think, you know, given their comp tier, this is the type of team that if they're on their game this weekend, if, you know, Saturday's their day, they can carry this into a performance that, you know, might shock people, throws them into the likes of Sloppy Seconds, Double Clutch, and I'm curious to hear your take on that, Mike. Is that surprising to you? Is that something that, you know, after watching some of their games, you're like, yeah, you know, they're beasts, and I get it.
Yeah, I'm not very surprised, especially noting that they've forced game threes with all of those very close, those teams, those really good teams. So it shows, right? And of course, you know, sometimes things go back and forth and it's just a team was down a bunch because someone got a bunch of ace and they stopped. But I don't think that's the case. I think they gave trouble to those teams. So I'm not necessarily very surprised. It's just kind of an interesting note, but it more speaks to how they will do against these unknown middle teams, right? Where like Toxicity, Gross Eggs and Ham, how they'll do against those teams that maybe are, you know, technically above them, but are close, right? Because their losses have come to the number one, number three, and number five. So so I'm not too shocked. I also think that is a very interesting note that you say about the semi-subjectivity of some stats, because you are correct. If we only look at Double Clutch's finals, right, we are looking at all of their losses, which likely will have worse stats than if we look at all of their semis.
Yeah.
So, right, when we're looking at Low Key, who hasn't made a finals, we're looking at their quarterfinals wins, right, and their semifinal losses, or et cetera. And that is a much different sample size, right? If we look at Rito Boys' round of 32 or their third pool, their, you know, 1v4 pool play match, they may have the best serve percentage, ace percentage of any team ever. So there is, that is truth and a good thing to note, that it's helpful when you look at stats in general is to know where they came from and what do they compare to.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And so that's where I think, you know, it's good to take these directionally. And I think, you know, that's where these tiers come in handy. When you look at this top tier of mm-hmm. Sloppy Seconds, Double Clutch, and Low Key, what you're really identifying there is that these are teams, you know, the reason that this is a standalone tier and is, you know, in my opinion, significantly better than the other tiers below them, is that these are teams that trend above average across the board. So check, you got that going for you. But also they have the ability and have demonstrated the ability to force breaks through both serving and strong defense. They, and that's where I think, you know, you mentioned, I want to see how this team Low Key compares to Y-Spike Toxicity. You know, that's where I really want to see it. Y-Spike Toxicity really has that one main avenue of forcing breaks. It's not that they're slouches defensively, but they're going to force more breaks off of their serves. How can a team like Low Key, who has more tools at their disposal, how does that help them perform?
Mm-hmm. Well, that concludes us going through the 16 teams, but I do have a couple more questions for Ryan's while we have the stats. Ezra is gone, and we are very sad about that. I'm going to ask Brian my questions, which I think you kind of just touched on, which is, right, Double Clutch and Low Key and all of them in that group. Are there a group of teams that stats-wise should be the semifinalists?
It's a great point. I think Sloppy Seconds, Double Clutch, and Assistive Touch each have the strongest kind of call out for this. You know, they stat above average in nearly everything. We obviously talked a little bit about Assistive Touch's serving, where they are below average, but that might be misleading given the end of the season they had. But they make up for it on defense, right? So I think those three teams are the clear kind of top. And the question really just remains, who's going to fill that fourth spot? You know, this all depends on things that you value higher than others. I think if you're looking at, you know, people that fall into a tier of, you know, what could be possible, I think you got to look at teams like Gold Diggers, Low Key. You know, those are teams that have the potential. I think Toxicity has opportunity, and I think Boisterous does. You know, there's, you know, I'm obviously leaving off some really talented teams with that statement, but just looking at teams who, you know, could fill that fourth spot, I'm looking at ones that have excelled at other, you know, either they have something that they're extremely good at and, you know, have marginalized their weaknesses, or are, you know, above average in most areas, and it might just need that little edge in nationals, like a Boisterous.
Mm-hmm. And with that little edge, through your either through the stats or just subjectively yourself looking through the stats and tracking them and doing your breakdowns, have you noticed a certain stat category or aspect of the game that is that X factor in general when it comes to winning, right? Like, is serving the most important part? Does it come down to ADT? Does it come down to serve receive?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that, you know, I can answer based off of my kind of feelings. I think, you know, after the some of the things that you guys have to look forward to in this offseason is we'll be running some kind of advanced analytics and looking at, you know, which of these kind of factors or, you know, which archetypes of the game or skills of the game, you know, contribute to winning the most. And so I'll say the objective evidence for this is, will be coming to y'all in the offseason. But subjectively, you know, there's probably three things that I like to look at. I think serving impact is the one. So that's your ace percentage plus force weak percentage. How strong is your serve? And it sounds obvious. It kind of is obvious. If you're an extraordinarily good serving team, you're likely going to win. And so that's just hugely important, clear indicator. The other one is going to be your adjusted defensive touches. You know, the teams that are getting a lot of these, as long as they don't have a glaring weakness in serving, these are teams that are just keeping balls alive. And there's, you know, that was what we all hoped was going to happen, was that defensive touches were going to become more important this season as we shifted to the no-hit zone. And I think the stats validated that. It's why we have a team like Assistive Touch, whose clear strength is their defense. And it's, you know, in a lot of people's minds, and I think the stats play out, a clear favorite to make that semifinals. And then the third thing that, you know, that I like to look at is round that plus minus. I'll say that it's breaks minus broken. And so if you think about what that really means, it's obviously closely correlated to wins, because it's looking at how many more points you won versus you lost. And so you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt. But I really like that one when looking at player evaluation, because, you know, at a team level, yeah, it's basically just correlated with wins. That's fine. But when you look at it at a player level, you can understand how a player held up to the pressure, both of the pressure of having to force breaks and give them away. And what I think that is really helpful to do is you can see teams, you know, even at the aggregate level, who, you know, maybe are, you know, average in other areas, but still maintained a strong, you know, round that plus minus. What that tells you is looking into that, you know, that area isn't quite measured by the stats. They may not, you know, be the best mm-hmm. team at putting the ball away, but guess what? They're, you know, teams aren't getting that back, or they're forcing really weak, you know, defensive touches, ones that are hard to get back to the net. And so it's so closely tied to the impact on the game, what we're all really looking for, which is breaks. And so it's always a good one to look at.
All right. And I think I have many more I want to ask, but we've been going for a while now, so I think I'm going to end it there, if that's okay with you, Brian.
Absolutely. Given my long-windedness, you got to be careful. You might just wind me up and I'll go forever.
We could be here for hours and just talking through this stuff. Plus, you have just data and data to work with. We'll end it there. Thank you, Brian, for joining. Of course, that is Brian Childs from RoundNet Analytics Worldwide, roundnetstats.com, and roundnetstats on Instagram. If you haven't seen, Brian has done a stats finals breakdown for every pro finals this year. You can find those all at leftyon2.com/blog. Please go check those out. I find them fascinating, and Brian does a great job, have tons of graphs and their whole glossary. If you didn't understand some of the terms used here, like adjusted defensive touch, etc. I also want to shout out, right? This is Nationals, we're doing Nationals hype. Please check out the tournament previews, pro women's premier contender, all on leftyon2.com/blog also. But really, I hope you enjoyed this. I've been Mike White. We had Ezra Dantowitz and Brian Childs. Again, Brian, thank you again.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. It was great to be a part of this. Huge shout out to Spikeball for paying for these stats. Couldn't be here without them. And a huge shout out to Logan Cornelius and Sam Constanti, co-founders of Raw with me. And a huge, huge, huge shout out. We are so thankful to our stats team, the guys who make this a reality. So love being on this. Love talking stats with y'all. And you know, please, if you enjoy stats, that content, you know, let us know in the comments. It's always good to get feedback and hear about how y'all are viewing these yourselves.
And the last call out I'll say is that you can have these for all of your games. Find out how on RadNetStats.com. I didn't end up doing it, but I was so tempted to do it for my semifinals loss because I just wanted to have an answer of why I lost other than just, Mike, you're bad. to maybe improve for next time. But maybe I'll still do that. It'll maybe help me sleep better at night. But anyway, that's where we end it. Thank you for listening. Maybe we'll see you again soon, and I hope you enjoyed. See ya.